Welcome to episode 131 of the Talking Talkie podcast. Today it's just Matt and I, and we are here to round up the Hemel Hempstead game and the Ivy Bridge game, and maybe look ahead to the cup game against Hungerford. So, how are you, Matt?
Yeah, I'm all right. Not too bad. I'd feel a bit better if we'd won, well, certainly one of our previous two games than it. Yeah, as we'll come on to, I'm sure. I don't give a toss about last night's match, but it'd be nicer to have won against Hemel Hempstead. I was on top of the world in the 84th minute. Just a shame that from the 87th minute, I was considerably less pleased. You know, it's been a little while to digest what happened on Saturday. And to be honest, I'm no clearer on what I saw. I don't really know how we managed to give up a 2-1 lead in the 84th minute to make it 2-2 by the 85th minute and be a goal down in the 86th minute. It's a mystery to me. And I haven't heard anything from Johnson or anybody else that helps me understand. So that's a bit disappointing. But, I mean, look, you were there. We can talk in a minute about what I think I saw, but what on earth did you see?
To me, it wasn't like it was a number of glaring errors. It wasn't like Hemel Hempstead were constantly getting in around the back and were deeply threatening and we were truly exposed by them. It was two set pieces and a mishap for the first goal. I know if you don't score any, then this, that and the other, but it's not like they were strategic errors of a deeply concerning nature. They were, especially sort of the swing, they were two set pieces in very quick succession.
One set piece and one, well, we lost the ball.
Were they not both on corners?
No.
Oh, well, this is embarrassing. Hawks?
It was two set pieces because the first goal was a set piece, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought the second one was.
Third one, Dan Martin got robbed.
Oh, okay.
High up the pitch in a situation when he shouldn't have done. That is right. It is a bit of a freak result. And when they go your way, most of the time, most supporters of most clubs take it. Because it happens a lot. And you go, well, yeah, whatever. But, you know, I didn't hear pick a random game. I didn't hear Arsenal fans going, oh, well, it was all luck when they beat Man United 3-1 a couple of weeks ago, when they were one inch of offside away from being 2-1 down in the 89th minute, and they for sure gone on to lose that game. All they cared about was, yeah, brilliant, we won it. There was no nuance to the discussion of the fact that actually they were, it was an accident that he played offside and everything else. So it was, you know, this, and that's just one example of the millions that happen around the world every week in football where these sort of freak-ish results come round in freakish circumstances. We were, for those of you who weren't there, we should say that we were great during the game, but we were an awful lot better, for example, than when we beat Slough 2-1. That really was a bit of a smash and grab. We, at no stage did we perform better than Slough did. We didn't have more of the ball. We didn't have more of the territory, I suppose. We didn't really do anything. And then Brad Ash turned up with two really very good goals. And we turned them over to one. And Mark Halstead had a good game.
Yeah.
This wasn't that. Halstead didn't touch the ball. He caught maybe two crosses and picked three out of his net, and that really was all he did.
Yeah, it was a very different game, I think, to some of the others that we've attended. I think there's been, it feels like Talkie have kind of evolving into it a bit this season. There's been lots of discussion thus far about the manner in which they've been winning games and that's going to catch up with them in time. And it feels, certainly the ones we've attended in person, feel like they're getting a little bit better each time. Some of those shaky results where, you know, we've played appallingly but somehow robbed 3 points. Don't necessarily seem to be the run of the way the games are going at the moment. I know talking about the loss and saying that we're improving is a bit of a juxtaposition, but it does feel like it's a little bit different. I mean, I don't know about you, but it felt like Torquay had significantly more chances than Hemel Hempstead. It seemed that maybe the execution in the final third was a bit of a problem, but they seemed to be doing a bit more with the ball than perhaps they have in other games.
Yeah, if you look at a bit of a sort of a funny terminology, maybe you, if you look at it in a macro rather than a micro sense, you forget the micro sense of one game and look at that performance, the way we played, the way we controlled the ball, etc., in a macro sense. You offer a team a chance to play like we did, for example, against Slough, because that's a game we won, but we were rubbish in, for an entire season, 46 games in a season. Or you offer them a chance to play like we did on Saturday for 46 games in a season. I guarantee you with everything I own, and it's a lot of stuff. As you know, I buy a lot of crap. I guarantee you with everything I own that the team that plays like we did on Saturday, 46 games, will finish higher in the division than the team that plays like we did at Slough. Forget the fact that we won the game, and I know people listening to this will deliberately misunderstand. Some people listening to this will deliberately misunderstand that and go, well, if you lose 46 games in a season, you come bottom. If you win 46 games, you win the title. Yeah, that ain't what I'm saying. Forget the result and performance. And if you perform like that, the same way that Hemel Hempstead, to talk about another team, if they play like that, you dominated as they did on Saturday, 46 games, they are going nowhere fast. They, you know, they're entitled to win the game however they win the game. And taking advantage of stupidity from Ross Marshall and bringing on some geezer of 11'14" and hoping that we don't pay any bloody attention to him at corner. If that works for you, that works for you, but I bet it doesn't work every week. Whereas controlling the ball, playing the entire game in the opposition's half, creating decent chances, etc., probably is a long-term plan, isn't it? So, yes, it's extremely disappointing to have coughed up 2 goals in 2 minutes, not even 2 minutes, a minute after we'd scored.
Yeah.
But there were positives to take. Housley didn't do anything, and the call a month ago was, oh, bloody hell, if it wasn't for Housted, we'd be bottom and all this. Well, now Housted hasn't touched the ball, but really for an hour and a half. What else do you want? But we're a National League South side. Some weeks we're going to get one half of the game right. Some weeks we're going to get the other half of the game right. Some weeks we're going to get every half of the game right. Mm-hmm. And we're going to win 5-0. Brilliant, yeah, great. It's better than it was. It's not brilliant. Better than it was, and on any given Saturday, play that game again, and 8 times out of 10 we win it and we get 2 draws from the other 2. That was the one in 100 freak we lose.
Yeah, I think it's one of those, isn't it? In the way that everyone was sort of saying about, you can't keep playing in the manner that we did against Slough, against St Albans even, you know, and keep expecting that to win. Well, this is the inverse of that. It is perhaps, I'm not saying that it was world-beating football. It wasn't the best football we've ever seen, and it certainly wasn't even the best football that we've ever seen Torquay produce, but it was better than what they've been producing earlier this season. During the game, there were a couple of points that the people around us were having various different grumbles, one of which was the decision to take Bradley Ash off. Some people around us thought that was maybe the wrong decision. In hindsight, do you feel that to be the case, or
you always feel a bit of a Charlie when you've taken a striker off and then you go behind, and you kind of wish that you hadn't, that you'd get him back on. upsetting that you caught me on the hoof here. I can't actually remember if he went off at 1 all or 2 1. I think it was 1 all at the time. Yeah, we didn't take him off between going 2 1 and going.
It was time.
So it's 1 all at the time. I haven't seen, having already said in this podcast, oh, we scored 2 brilliant goals. I haven't seen a huge amount of Brad Ash yet. Bonds, no, I you know full well, I don't know a damn thing about any of these players until I've seen them play for us. You know, the gag on Twitter is that anybody signs anybody and I just go, who? Because I don't know who they are. I'm not Joe Pope, for example, our friend over at Off the Line Blog, who knows every player at every team in every division from Land's End to Johnny Brooks. It's a remarkable skill and one I don't have. So I'm going off his reputation last season, but he got like 3,000 goals for a team that got 3,001 goals last season, still managed to get relegated. So he comes to us knowing where the back of the net is in this division. I don't know whether he's getting much more close attention this year because he played all these teams last year, so they knew who he is.
Yeah, possibly.
And the game plan can just be right, get tight to Brad Ash and hope that the rest of them are hopeless. I mean, in that scenario, you kind of hope that Jarvis was already on 15 goals because he was being left alone and could just sort of thump the ball in the net. But I don't know. I haven't seen... He's been all right, but I think maybe my expectations of Brad were a bit too high. He didn't really do anything on Saturday. He certainly wasn't causing them any particular problems.
No, I mean, I think he fed Jarvis through a few times, but it probably didn't feel like he did much on the basis that none of those opportunities really culminated in anything. And a couple of people around us did say at the point of taking him off, they felt like he was just starting to get into the game. He was, you know, ferret in the box a bit. And then it felt like the wrong sort of decision. I suppose you'll never know, but as you say, at the point of taking him off, nobody knew what was about to happen. Maybe having an additional striker on the pitch would have made a difference in terms of trying to equalise, but I suppose it's certainly not his fault that we had a mad 3 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, he wouldn't have made, neither of the goals they scored would have made a blind, would have been affected.
Yeah.
Or when Brad Ash or anybody else on the pitch. So I don't think that was that. To be honest, we looked beaten as soon as they went 3-2 up with 2 minutes to go, because it was such a relief when we went 2-1 up, because we so deserved it, because we'd been hammering on the door for an hour and a half or 86 minutes, whatever it was, 85 minutes. We were behind 2. Complete freak that, for those of you who haven't seen it, weren't there, I'll tell you about in a minute. And from that moment on, it was all us. The issue I've got with us going a goal down is it kind of spoils the game, because every team in this division, virtually every team in this division, wants to do nothing but pinch an early goal and then put 11 men behind the ball, which is, again, perfectly valid, perfectly reasonable. It's what we would do if we played Luton in the third round of the cup. We would hope to pinch goal. We wouldn't go out swinging because they'd hammer us. And if teams come at us at Torquay, we've probably got the players to beat them toe to toe. So you don't do that. And that's a perfectly valid way of playing the game. So what we don't want to do is what we've done too often this season, just gift the opposition a 1-0 lead after 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Through no endeavour of their own, and then kind of have to spend quite a difficult rest of the game passing, moving, chasing, snatching opportunities because you're desperate to get back on level terms, etc.
Yeah.
We stood with, among others, we stood with very handsome Johnny Jones, and I said to him about 20 minutes in, if we got in, he conceded that goal. Because if we hadn't, this actually would have been quite a good start to the game for us. He had all the ball, forced a few corners. Their goalie had made two saves that he knew nothing about. His face, I think. He needs treatment for a broken nose and a couple of swollen eyes because he just stood still and smacked him.
I think even I said at the time, he didn't save it. He just got in the way of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, you keep him out, you keep him out.
Yeah, of course.
There's a chance that him, but... there is a pretty good chance that Mark Halstead is listening to this or whatever else. Mark, if you want to make every save the rest of the season and know fuck all about them, that's fine with us. we don't ask you to get your gloves dirty, just get in the way, right? So again, they're perfectly valid, it's not criticism, but it wasn't like we were putting the ball where he could get it or whatever, it was just hitting him. So, you know, we had started quite well, apart from just a crazy bit of play from Ross Marshall. Ball gets floated in, the free kick gets floated into the far post, and he stood on the goal line. All he's got to do is watch it out. He doesn't get a shout. It's down in red, so we know. He doesn't get a shout, but he's got to know because he's at the far post. So he's got, in his vision, which now is 20-20, I'm told, in his vision, he's got a picture of the goal. Like, the goal is in his face. Can't miss it. So he's got to know, well, nobody can get around the back of me and there's nobody coming in to win it. And it was at like knee height. So it wasn't even like he stood a chance of somebody coming over the top of it. The ball travels quite a long way. He has to know, right, if this ball gets to me, just let it go. Step out of the way. That's absolutely fine. What he does instead is poke it back into his own 6-yard area. And of course, that guy just... thumps it into the back of the net. It's absolutely ridiculous. So that's, you know, that's gift number one. Just, the guy must have thought it was impressive. So then we're a goal down, and then we're chasing the game. And then I think the question was about Brad Ash, and like, no. As soon as we took him off, the goals we scored were left, as soon as we took him off.
Yeah.
Within about 2 minutes, now I think about it, at 1-0 down. At 1-0, no, 1-0 down. We played a really clever ball to a good run between the centre-backs through the middle into Jarvis, whose initial shot was saved, and then a follow-up was blocked. And then, I don't know, I haven't actually seen the highlight, so I don't know whether you can see it on the videotape, but live, you can see that Jenkins Davis, he went to hit it too hard. As it bobbles out to him 12 yards out, he goes to just pile drive it. And you can actually, live, you could see that he stopped his foot and then control powerfully.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he did it, but he controlled the shot. And you could see the moment that his brain had gone, hang about. Don't just blast it. Because his little eyes lit up.
Yeah.
Like they do when you play sport, and you think, right, there's a gimme here. You know, the ball is gonna, you're playing, pick a game at random. I don't know, if you're playing something that everyone, I'm sure listening, will understand, real tennis. And the ball comes off the back of the penthouse and it's dropping down a nice distance from the back wall. You think, right, your little eyes light up. And you think, right, I'm gonna hit this really, really hard. Key actually to winning a point, scoring a goal, is to go, no, I'm not going to hit this really hard, I'm going to hit really well.
Yeah.
Just going to guide the ball into the net, or not into the net, playing tennis, obviously. And that's what he did. The defender valiantly got a foot to him, almost deflected it away for what would have been the greatest goal line clearance of all time, which should have just about summed up our luck that day, to be honest. But no, it was a nicely controlled finish, and I was very, very grateful for it.
Do you reckon we missed stops? I know some of our podcasters don't necessarily care much for stops, but there was some discussion on the, you know, terraces. About it on the day, and some people seem to suggest that We missed him.
I think he makes Bonnellan more effective. The few times I've seen the two of them, he does make Bonnellan more effective. So you get kind of two for one. I've regular listeners will know I've never been much of a Donovan fan. He's growing on me a little bit.
Donovan to you is what Stobbs is to
To
Sandra.
Sandra, yeah.
I've said it there.
I was covered by it the first time I really paid any attention to Donovan, which was Notts County away, where he was just one of the worst individual performances I've ever seen from a talkie player. But on the basis that he looked disinterested, not incapable of avoiding that. But that was 2 years ago. I just don't
Don't hold a grudge
don't
for
hold a
ages.
grudge. He's obviously a much better player than I thought he was from that day. But unfortunately, my implicit bias against him is just never to
Sick.
go away. But he does make Donald a better player, so you get kind of two for one. We weren't really playing that from wide that often. Now, would we have been better doing so potentially? Because they did pack the defense. They were sat on a line, not much outside their own penalty area, and it was very clearly two blocks of five. It really was. We're a goal up. We are not here to entertain. We're here to win. So, which was a bit strange because when they did try and pass the ball, they were actually pretty good at it.
Yeah, they were an odd combination of being able to pass the ball and get it out wide and be quite effective with it, but also really swamp any goalkeeper at any given time. On occasions, it felt like they were very effective at double marking and sometimes even triple marking. There seemed to be so many Hampstead players
Yeah.
around any Torquay player or at any given moment.
I did. An hour in, I counted their players. Sure, the referee, yeah.
Like
But
there were
I
too
collected the
many.
billet, yeah. So they did only have 11 on the pitch, but it felt like more because of the way they play. Would a dual threat of width with Collins on one side and Stobbs on the other, really dragging them wide, would that have been effective? Potentially, yeah.
That did
It
seem to be what a lot of people around us were saying, like that we didn't seem to be making best use of the width.
Yeah, because we just didn't have a wide player. This is sort of partially why that I mean, wide Dylan Silva is a polarizing figure, but would even he have been an okay option? I mean, I don't really think so, but just somebody, a warm body out wide to stretch their defense and create gaps through which, I mean, I've already said that our first goal equaliser came from a run between the centre backs. Okay, if you stretch those another 4 or 5 yards wide, maybe then Brad Ash has a bit of space. Maybe he can make that run through the middle and we can find a pass into him. So yes, he potentially would have made, if not a direct difference, I'm not sort of saying he'd got a hatty and been our saviour, right? But he may have changed the way Hemel Hempstead had to play in order to counteract what we were doing.
I think lots of people were just sort of saying about width, and you're quite right that just another body would have probably made a difference. Another thing that was sort of mentioned a few times was nobody really seemed, and it seems a persistent problem with Torquay this season, nobody really seems keen to kind of really run on for the ball. Everyone seems quite stagnant in their positioning. When it comes to the idea of going forward or going in on goal. And I think that was made ever more evident against Hemel. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I've forgotten to ask you about that game.
Other than the goals, which you can see online, they're available. If you go to it's worldwideweb.com/YouTube, You'll find them on there. It's some little known video sharing site to which apparently Talkie upload things. Yeah, they're online. You can see them. Marshall's header is quite nice. You know, deft little flick, similar redolent to the one that he missed against, I don't know, somebody a month or so ago in at the far post. Little flick header, he put it wide before he stuck it in this week. That was the best moment of my week. I was extremely happy. I did pull-ups on a girder that was
very impressive.
I got very excited. I just tried to sort of go a bit bananas when we go 2-1 up, and then the inflation. There was no jeering. That was quite funny. When we got it to 2-1 and then 2-1 down, 3-2 down, there wasn't any jeering from our lot. There were one or two, let's call them new faces. The usual troublemakers who gave up abusing Steward for the temerity of having eyeballs and decided that they would instead have a go at Johnson and
it was the most impressive, perhaps the wrong way to term it, but the most impressive mood swing that I've ever witnessed.
Yeah.
Within seconds, we were going from singing we're top of the league to Johnson out. And it was quite insane. It's a whiplash.
Yeah, it was we are talking, Johnson is our king, to jump to we want Gary out within 90 seconds.
Yeah, incredible stuff.
Talk about sing when you're winning, Jesus. It was very silly behaviour from very silly people. Their goals. The disappointment, if you're going to have disappointment in Johnson, it's maybe that he hadn't committed, because we must have known, Johnson must have known, that they've got a bloke who's 11 foot tall. And he's been around the game for 50 years, 60 years, whatever it is. And he knows more about it. He's forgotten more about it than I, in the last 10 minutes, than I will ever know. And one of the things that I know is that when a team, particularly at this level, has a set piece and they've got a bloke on who's 11 foot tall, they're going to stand him 10 yards beyond the far post and wallop it to him and hope that he can head it back across the box to discombobulate the goalie and the defenders just enough. Somebody has a half a yard space to tuck it in from 6 inches. Questo presto, watch the highlights, guess what happens? It's just a tiny bit disappointing that Johnson didn't apparently manage sufficiently to communicate to the lads throughout the week. They've got some geezer who's 11 foot tall, and when he comes on, I'm not picking on Donlan, I'm just saying maybe it's his man, because Donlan's quite tall, he's quite physical. My guess is you don't give it to Tom, actually, do you? So, right, that'd be like giving Peter Crouch to Danny Stevens at a corner. So, I mean, you probably say all week to Dunman, when this big guy comes on, your job is to stand on his toes and pull his shirt and whatever. The referee's not giving a penalty. At a corner, provided you don't haul him down, if what you do is you go up with him for the ball and nudge him and shove him and needle him and whatever and just stop him winning it, if he looks like he's going to win his header, just push him off balance a bit so he heads it out for a goal kick. And what we did instead, apparently, was just ignore the fact that the jolly green giant was on. And he was huge. He wasn't just like, 6'3", well, he's a big fella. He was getting off 7 foot tall. And they just hoofed the ball to him from this corner. And again, that sounds like criticism, as they're entitled to him, and as we would if we had somebody that size. Bosh it to him. He heads it back across there. Guy just toes it in from an inch. It just so crushingly obvious what was coming. And I'm just a little tiny bit disappointed. Maybe Johnson had spent all week telling one of the players to stand on that guy's toes, and our guy just forgot what he understood. But that comes down to Johnson making sure that we are fully prepared for these occasional freak threats that come our way that you're going to find at this level. I don't imagine he's I don't know the guy. I mean, he did score the second goal with his feet, good touch for a big man. I don't imagine he's the second coming of Pelé.
You'd imagine he'd be starting if he was, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and if he was all that good and he's huge, he wouldn't be playing in the non-league set.
No.
If he was my usual complaint, same as with a few of the massive people we've come across at our level, if he was 5'8", he'd be stacking shelves and saying to me, he wouldn't be playing football. So good luck to the geezer. Good luck to Hemel Hempstead. I've got a particular affinity with Hemel Hempstead for a couple of different reasons. They were fine. Brown was okay.
That's nice. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks to Tom Bedfellows, who bought me a delicious cheeseburger. Pub down the road was good. If you've not been before, it's dead easy to get to. It's 2 minutes off the M1.
Park anywhere near a junction.
We did witness one act of automotive vandalism that I'll say absolutely no more about, the fear of getting all the wrong people in all the wrong sorts of trouble. But the parking's easy. The area is okay. I mean, you know, you probably wouldn't fall over yourself to live there, but it's okay. You're not going to lose your life walking to the pub. No, if you've not been to Hampton before and you fancy a visit, go. It's fine.
Agree. Right. Should we very briefly, and I mean very briefly, have a chat about Ivy Bridge?
Yes. Okay.
So, I think, I don't know, the fan base seem a little bit torn, but I think majority of the fan base are not necessarily disappointed with last night's results. So, for those who aren't aware, spoiler, Torquay played Ivy Bridge, went down to penalties in the end. It was a draw at 2-2, went to penalties, and I, unfortunately, yeah, again, spoiler, we lost on penalties. Might still be too soon to talk about penalties.
I do not give shit one about Devon Bowl. I don't care about the FA Trophy. I really don't care about the Devon Bowl. And I never have and I never will, even if we win it. If we get to the final, I won't go on principle because I don't care. It's a fucking reserve under-18s competition that they make you enter as a precondition of being allowed to enter the FA Cup, as I understand it. I was talking to Massive Ben at the game on Saturday, and he said apparently it takes precedence over a league game. The FA, for some reason, got it in their minds that people care more about a trophy such as it is, awarded for beating a load of Sunday league sides, than we do about the league. And there was an instance last year where somebody, Farnborough or somebody, got to the final. They had to play the final of this stupid competition on the Tuesday, the Hampshire Bowl, presumably, and then move the league game to the Wednesday, play two games in 24 hours, one of which was just pathetic final. I don't care. It doesn't tell you a damn thing about the club, Johnson, Downs, the players. It's completely irrelevant. It's a pointless trophy, a complete distraction, load of cost that the club just doesn't need to bear, travelling to bloody Ivy Bridge on a Tuesday, that is now done and dusted.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just for anybody who maybe does care for a slightly more factual roundup rather than our opinions, last night it was, certainly mostly sort of youth teamers. I know that Ryan Hansen was the captain. Torquay did go ahead. They scored first. And in the second half, Ivy Bridge, who interestingly are apparently unbeaten in their first 10 games, went 2-1 up, and then It was Luke Pearce who equalised for Torquay, and then obviously penalties. So, yeah, not a huge amount to kind of round up, I don't think. I think a lot of people were not necessarily displeased. It's a difficult position to be in because we know that Torquay as a team are quite fragile when it comes to things like injuries. We've already got the added difficulty and complexity this year of not necessarily being able to play our full roster because of plastic pitches. So the additional games against various different teams with pitches of various different standards, it is perhaps a headache that is worth removing from the equation.
Well, yeah, just forget it. If we could withdraw from the competition and not lose the benefits that the competition brings, then we would 100%. So, right, it's a farce. So nobody cares. Yes, we've gone out, but for God's sake, if you've woken up this morning like a bear with a sore head because we've lost to Ivy Bridge. I mean, no, we haven't. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
Okay, so now we have something a little bit different. We have Chris with us, and Chris is a fan and a committee member with Hungerford Town.
Hello, all.
Hello.
Hi, Chris. How you doing? We have co-opted you into appearing here today because we have drawn Hungerford in the FA Cup. We play you guys on Saturday, and neither P nor I knew much about Hungerford. So we thought we'd ask you on. Tell us just a
Well,
little bit about how your season's gone, how you're getting on, what to expect maybe from that, and to maybe to tell you a little bit about what we hope to see on Saturday from Torquay, and then you can, I don't know, text the manager or something and let him know. Got some inside
sure.
info. It'll be wrong, inevitably.
Sure. So it's a draw that's really excited our fans. Obviously, Torquay being an ex Football League club, being one of the biggest clubs, I'd argue, in sort of non-league. Also, when we were in the National League South recently, so we got relegated last year. One of the seasons that we needed to stay up was the year you got promoted to the National League, and we got a 1-0 away win to help us sort of stay up, and that's sort of a legendary game in Hungerford. So a lot of fans are excited to sort of go back and relive that and go to a nice sort of ground. So it's been a really exciting draw for the fans, and we're planning to bring quite a few down. Well, for us, so you know, we've got a pretty good away following anyway, and I think I'd be disappointed if we didn't have 150 down there probably. So we're quite, I mean, it's probably not on the scale of some of the support bases you get down there, but for a town of only sort of 5,000 residents, that's pretty good going, we think. So we're really excited about it. Yeah, so if you just want to ask any questions in general and to prompt me, and I'll fire away.
So how has your season been going so far?
A mixed bag, I would say. So getting relegated last year, transitioning to this league and a new team always takes time and is difficult. You know, we were no doubt punching above our weight in the league above, you know, smallest budget, etc. So coming down to this level, we had no illusions of it being easy by any means, and I would argue that, you know, most fans would be really happy just to have a sort of settled season, finish sort of hopefully in the playoffs or something like that, you know, challenge, but not expecting us necessarily to go straight back up, although obviously everybody wants that. So the season started at home to Plymouth Parkway, a club localish to you, and we won 7-0, or was it 7-1? I can't remember. I think it was 7-0. And everybody was thinking, oh, maybe it might be a bit easier than we thought. And then we had a rude awakening because although we've not, no one's sort of taken it lightly or anything, we went away to Cheshire. We're obviously one of the sort of more favourites in this league, I suppose, and we lost there, and then we lost away at Bracknell. So it sort of came down to earth with a bit of a bump. But we started to sort of pick up and get a bit more results. We're unbeaten at home. We got our first away win last night in the league, which is always good. We're starting to get a more settled team. Players are getting to know each other, so it's looking a lot more positive, I think.
That's good news. Is there anyone we need to be aware of? Have you got a superstar striker banging them in for fun, or a tricky little winger that's going to cause us trouble?
But it's one of these things that I don't want to sort of give away our secrets, really, because we want to come down and beat you. But I mean, if you just Google, we've got a striker at front called Conor McDonough. He's scoring for fun at the moment. I'm not even sure how many scored already. It must be 10 already. So he's a good striker. We've got, a good winger in Ellis Watts, who's come from us, and he won the league with Weston last year, Weston Supermare. We've got a lot of good players, but I think it's more about a team ethic rather than individuals that are going to win us games. It's we go as a team, and that's probably our strength. Personally, I think our key player, in my opinion, is our goalkeeper. Ryan Clark. He played numerous seasons in the Football League. I'm an Oxford United fan as well. I used to go home and away with Oxford for years. He was in goal with us in the National League when we got promoted back to the Football League. He's a experienced goalkeeper, to say the least, and it's something that we missed last year. I would argue the two main reasons we got relegated last year is we didn't have anybody to put the ball in the net, and we've got that this year. And we had at least 10 goalkeepers last year due to injuries, loans, bad luck. So having a settled goalkeeper that we can build the team around is massive.
We Torquay fans of a particular vintage will well remember our most recent season in League One under Leroy, where we had, I think, 6 goalkeepers. And that was we came down by like a point on the last day. If we'd have had one goalkeeper throughout the season, there's absolutely no way we'd have been relegated in 2004-05. We feel your pain. There are an awful lot of Torquay fans listening to this now, nodding along, going, yeah, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, it's one of those things. We had one great keeper last year called Jed Ward, who was on loan from Bristol Rovers, and he was fantastic. And if we had him all season, I'm sure we would have probably stayed up, I would have said. But it's that whole thing. It's not just getting in a keeper. He might be there one game, two games, three games. Then the defence have to get used to them. They've got to get used to the club. They might not be as vocal as they would normally be because they're nervous and new to the team. It's that the two key positions, aren't they, are up front and in goal in any team. And if you're losing one of those, you're struggling. Well, we struggled at both ends last year. So we were fucked basically from the start.
That is a tale familiar. I mean, certainly to all fans of teams who've come down, and United supporters might not recognise it, but like that is a tale as old as time, isn't it, across football. If you're not doing it's at either end, we looked good last year. Between the penalty areas, we looked absolutely fine. And then in them, at either end, we didn't. For the vast majority of the season, we looked absolutely hopeless, which is why we got relegated.
I think we lost between 10 and 12 games, 1-0 last year. I mean, so that shows we weren't a bad team. We were just missing at both ends. And fair play to Danny, our manager. He got in a good keeper, but then he got recalled in Jed. And then when he got recalled for one game because they had injuries at Rovers, he broke his hand in training. So he was out, and he came back towards the end of the season, you know, and he was brilliant. And I think he's got a massive future ahead of him. He'll be a Football League keeper. He's only young, maybe 19 or something. He's on loan at Wealdstone this year, maybe, or I might have got that right or wrong, or Bromley or someone like that. But he's a fantastic keeper. He's going to have a massive future in football. And Danny also tried getting it right the other end. And we got a player in called David Barang, who was at Crawley, I think. And he scored 5 in 5. And we were thinking, oh, this is it now. We're sorted. We're gonna solve the problems. And then he got injured and was out for the season. And he's still out now. We've managed to keep him this year, but he's probably not due back till November. And it's just that sort of bad luck and injuries. And, you know, obviously we went down because we weren't good enough, but it was a hell of a frustration. Everything that went wrong, could go wrong last year, went wrong. Absolutely everything, including our chairman deciding that they were going to move to Pastures News, going to Gloucester City in January. So they told us in January. So then we had that on our head all the way through that, you know, we were losing our chairman, etc. So, yeah, an interesting season last year.
sounds very interesting. It's also interesting you mentioned about the chairman, because I didn't know that. And my next question really to you is going to be about how you feel your club's run. One of the big issues that we have is that we're owned by somebody none of us have ever seen, Clark Osborne. The only thing we know about him is he has a long and dark history of promising to build stadiums for clubs, knocking the old stadiums down and then disappearing.
Yeah, that's not good, is it?
And he's done it at Bristol Rovers as well. This is not a guy who does it at, you know, small club pieces, United or whatever they're called. But, like, you know, he takes over big, fairly big clubs and then kind of basically puts them in enormous financial distress for his own gain. So none of us are particularly happy with the guy who owns us. We've never seen him. We don't like the people that he's got in charge to run. So I was going to ask how your ownership is and how you find the relationship you've got. But I suppose it's difficult to have only been there 3, 4, 5 months.
So when it comes to like chairmen and owners, as an Oxford fan, we've had an absolutely rogue in charge before. And well, we've had two really. We've had Robert Maxwell and Kassam.
Yeah, of course.
I'm fully personally aware of bad owners, and you know, I'm relatively new to Hungerford, so I've only been going to watch them for 3 seasons because I was a season ticket holder at Oxford for 20 plus years. My wife used to go most home and away games with Plymouth, and it got to the situation that our kids were getting frustrated, getting dragged to Oxford and Plymouth. So we started going to watch Hungerford and they all come along. So that's sort of how I got into it. In relation to the owners, you know, Nicky and Patrick, before they came along, so I suppose I'll go back actually. The main thing about Hungerford Town is we're actually a committee-run club. So no one actually owns the club. You can pay your money, you become a member of the club, and each year we have an AGM and you vote on the chairman, you vote on the vice chairman and everybody on the committee. So the land that the ground is built on is owned by the town and manor at Hungerford, and we pay a nominal fee to rent it. But then all the physical structures on the ground are built, paid for, owned and maintained by the football club. Okay. So we're never going to be in a position that an owner can come in buy the club, I suppose, and bankrupt us, because we are a members run club. There's not much they could do that would threaten us, maybe take out a loan and disappear, but that's probably about as far as it could probably get. So we're really lucky in that situation. I think we're probably one of the few member only clubs remaining, which is great, because if you are a member in theory, you know, I own a percentage of a football club, you know, which is great. And it doesn't cost much. I think it costs 20 or 30 quid a season to become a member. So it's not a great thing. And we get members' prices on the beer, which is great. So I pay £3.50 a pint. So wow. Laughing, really. So it pays for itself on beer alone. So in that sense, we're quite lucky. Now, the previous... I've only known two chair people, Patrick and Nicky, our previous ones who've now gone to Gloucester, and our current one, Alan O'Donoghue. Now, Nicky and Patrick ran the club really well and as a business, and then they moved on to Patster's new, and Alan's come in this season. He's previous been a vice chairman. He's Hungerford through and through, loves the club. So he's letting the committee get on with it, supporting us where we need and doing what a good chairman does. So I would argue that we're, you know, a very well-run club. We really, because we don't have anybody, you know, a big money bag person throwing in money, we have to fundraise everything. You know, there are, you know, the chairman puts in money. There are big, you know, there are people who are loyal to the club who certainly put in decent chunks of money each season. But the majority of the money that we get is fundraising. So that's why when we're in the National League South, we have the smallest budget, because everything we get is from our food sales on match days. So I don't know if you look at Footy Scran and everything, they were promoting the hell out of the Ball Pit Beast burger and stuff, because we make, you know, that on its own on match day probably pays for four players' wages, I guess, you know, weekly wages. And then we do your normal stuff like your bingos and your quizzes and race nights and put on bands and stuff at the foot club, all to bring in that additional money that helps fund the club through the season. So I would say we're a pretty well ran club, and this FA Cup tie is certainly going to help us. We would have preferred it at home, but you know, the money, because we obviously split the gate, you know, so that's going to help us this year, you know. So yeah, I think we're a really well run club, to be fair, as a whole. But if anybody's listening and wants to chuck in $100,000 or something, feel free to contact Hungerford Town Football Club.
Yeah, gift once in the mouth, whatever you're doing. Yeah. No, that fascinating. Wow. We're obviously quite a lot of the talk that we have on the terraces and online and stuff is about, well, what alternatives are available to having a property developing through a co-owner. And that seems, you know, it's not going to be an easy life. Exeter City manage it, being fan owned, and they're in League One. They beat Premier League opposition last night in the League Cup.
Yeah,
they can be. So that's that. I only actually have one last request of you, and that is to give us a prediction for what you think is going to happen on Saturday.
So, as a committee member, I want to get a draw, bring it home, get the extra money and win at home, and then progress, obviously. As a fan, I want to go down there and obviously win. It's going to be tough. It is going to be tough. There's no illusions there. You're a good team in the league above at the moment. But we went to Chippenham, who are our local rivals, and we beat them 4-1 in the last round, also in your league. So we know we can do it. And if we play like we can, we know we can put a performance in that's going to trouble you. And I suppose for me personally, yes, I want to win, but I just don't want us to, you know, disgrace ourselves. I want us to put on a good performance and get something out of it. And that's what I want. Prediction, I'll go 2-1 Hungerford. I'm not going to say we're going to lose, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, I was hoping you'd say that. I didn't want you to come here and go, I think we'll lose 4-0, because that's disappointing. Okay, all right.
No, we're going to come and give it a right old go, really.
Yeah, good. Well, that'll make it much more interesting tie, won't it? An interesting game, rather than turning up 11 men behind the ball and just hoping for the best. I think if you come and swing at us, I do honestly think you'll be perhaps a bit surprised about how well you do, because we are... All right, we're a fairly big team in the division above. I don't think there's going to be that much between the two teams, in all honesty. Come and give it a bloody good go and...
Have a good day.
Yeah, don't die wondering. Don't go wondering.
That's it. You know, like I said, in the past, I've been an Oxford fan. I've been away with Oxford to some cup games. And, you know, we went to Arsenal away when Chris Wilder... No, Ian Atkins was manager of us. You know, we parked the bus and we got beat 2-0 at Arsenal or something. But it was the most disappointing most Oxford fans have sort of been at a cup tie, because we just didn't even give it a go. If we go, give it a go, put pressure and we lose 4-0, that's, you know, that's what it is. I'd rather do that than sit behind the ball, not have a shot all game and lose 1-0. You know, I'd rather give it a go.
Well, unless you have any questions, Chris, anything you'd like desperately to know about Hungerford Town?
Don't think so. I think you've given us a really comprehensive overview, and it's been really nice to hear about the way you run yourselves as well. It's interesting, it's, as you said, to hear about people who aren't running football clubs as charlatans.
Yeah, which is the only topic of conversation in Torquay. Thank you very much indeed.
Not a problem.
For the time to talk to us. Good-ish luck on Saturday. Because I kind of want us to win. But definitely for the rest of the season.
Of course you want to win. You wouldn't be a fan if you didn't, would you? Let's be honest.
Yeah,
unless you've got alternative motives where you want to absolutely get battered, you want to get relegated, and you want your owners to fuck off and go somewhere else, that's a different matter. And if that's the case, I wish you all the luck on that, because no one wants crap owners.
If I thought that would work, that's what I'd be rooting for.
Cheer at the door.
Yeah, absolutely cheer at the door, but I don't think that would work. So, no, good luck, certainly beyond Saturday. Get back up into National League South. With any luck, you won't be playing us in the league again, but if you do, we look forward to having you down. I'm afraid we don't do members' prices on beer.
We've got a lot coming down. We've sold a whole coach already, and I think we're getting a little bit more on another coach. So you would have taken some money if we've got cheap beer, then that's for sure.
All right, that will pass on to the club. All right, thank you so much for your time. And we will maybe speak to you, I don't know, who knows, at some later date if we're doing a preview of a league game and we find ourselves in the same division, we'll have you back on.
Yeah, hopefully both in the National League, yeah.
Wouldn't it be amazing? Thanks, Chris. See you soon.
No worries. Thank you.
Okay, I think that's us for this week then. So obviously we've thanked Chris for his time. Thank you, Matt, for your time.
That's all right, yeah. You'll get my invoice as usual.
And but next week we'll get someone on who knows the difference between set pieces and open play.
Are we signing some new podcasters? That'll be nice.
Maybe.
Thank you very much. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.